Welcome to another cataclysmic episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Annihilation, Book 2. And now, the cast begins.
Alright everybody, welcome back to another Scrolltastic and Elastic episode of the Atomic Power Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey!
And David.
Hey!
And this week we're at Annihilation Book 2, which is shocking because next week's Book 3 and last week was Book 1.
Surprise!
We might mix it up for the middle one, but no, just Book 2 of Annihilation. This was written by a bunch of people, more namely, let's see, let me find the page here, Keith Giffen, Javier Grillo Marcal, and Simon Furman.
Nice.
Simon Furman is so easy after Javier Grillo Marcal.
I'm 100% sure you pronounced that wrong.
So this collects Super Scroll 1-4, Annihilation Ronin 1-4, and Annihilation Silver Surfer 1-4.
But not in that order.
Not in that order. But it doesn't. Yeah, the order doesn't really matter. They don't really. They don't interact at all.
Well, within this comic, they interact in part 3.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it all comes around eventually. So the thing that confused me about this one was Ravenous.
Okay.
Why is he scary?
Because he's
Ravenous.
He's hungry.
But like,
he wants to eat Silver Surfer.
But like, you tell Silver Surfer, I'm your equivalent in the negative zone, or I'm your anti-whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then he still loses a bunch.
Well, he has like a scary dog thing.
Well, yeah, because remember they figure out that the dogs are really what's powerful. I mean, Ravenous is strong, but the dogs are what
connect them to the strength.
Yeah, it's what is scary to the Heralds, is the dogs. Which don't really matter that much.
Yeah. I don't know, I remember reading it, and he was like, I have the negative force or something, the opposing force?
Yeah, opposing force or unstoppable force. Or something. I think it's opposing force.
Is that like the negative zone equivalent to the cosmic force?
I think apparently, it's like the inverse of it?
I don't know. That was the only part that kind of confused me.
The power cosmic versus the opposing force.
Why does the Silver Surfer have underwear?
Oh yeah, he has underwear in a couple shots.
Yeah.
It's really weird because other places there are people that don't have any clothing. It's just like they're what they are is what they are. Like I think the Fiery Herald.
Fire Lord, yeah.
Fire Lord. He doesn't wear underwear.
Well, because underwear would burn up, Jen. Come on.
Yeah, but why Silver Surfer gotta wear underwear? Like, he doesn't have no junk.
Yeah, Fire Lord has no gender. Well, I mean, he's obviously male. But not, you know, down there. Okay. Why couldn't
There's
Silver Surfer just
censor.
Be like that?
Maybe Silver Surfer spent so much time on Earth, he developed a sense of modesty.
I thought you were about to say something else.
And the other one, what's the star creature?
Stardust?
Stardust doesn't have any junk either.
Well, Stardust is made out of, like, cosmic... stuff. I was going to say cosmic junk.
And the Fallen also. No nothing with the starry hair, but no nothing down there. And no clothing over it.
You know, what's weird, too, is they refer to Stardust as, like, a kangaroo several times. That is not like any fucking kangaroo I've ever seen.
Maybe it's a space kangaroo that we didn't meet.
A spaceroo?
Yes.
I could see, like... does Galactus just hire space Australians? Silver Surfer could be Australian.
Well, I mean, I guess it could matter if... Does Silver Surfer ever had kids anywhere?
I don't know.
Because if Silver Surfer ever had kids, like, before he became a Herald... Or after he left Galactus' service, like, if at any point he ever had kids, I can understand Marvel thinking that they would have to include pants. Right?
I just feel like, it's like when you badly bleep out a curse word. That's not even that bad. Like when you bleep out, like, the front half of damn or something, and everyone knows what was said. It's kind of like that here. It's like, you don't need.
Okay, let's just... I think it was an artistic choice, because on the cover of this, he doesn't have underwear on.
Yeah, but he's also got his legs crossed in just that kind of way where his junk might be down there and you just don't see. Like, he's not wearing his silver boxer briefs. The point
I
is...
I think we need to move on from this.
The point is that...
Aren't we talking about Ravenous?
Sorry, I think this was my fault. Well, this was my fault.
But as an artistic choice, adding on those boxers, and all they really did was add, what, 1, 2, 3 lines, right? Mm-hmm. You take out those lines and it all looks perfectly normal. And it's not a topic of discussion at all. But just adding those 3 lines brings your attention to the fact that he's wearing underwear and nobody else is.
I almost feel like it was an office troll who came by and was like, and drew in 3 lines on every
probably,
shot of him.
It was probably an editor.
Maybe
like,
he is endorsing some kind of space underwear, and he has to wear it all the time.
Every time you see like a shot of his bag, it's got a little Fruit of the Loom logo down there.
Yeah. Fruit of the Cosmos.
That's what's in there, all right. So he is a badass, though, Silver Surfer.
He is.
He seems mildly powerful.
Especially after, I think my favorite... So in all of this, you're supposed to get how strong everybody is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to go, oh shit, look at what Ronan's doing, or oh shit, look at how cool Super Skrull is, or oh shit, Noah just flew through that spaceship. But the one in here that actually made me think, oh shit, this is fucking cool, is when he remakes a surfboard out of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he just like... When Ravenous is like, I got your surfboard, what now, bitch? And he just goes, ain't no thing. And just like, makes a new one. That's cool.
Or when he makes like the black hole. That was so fucking awesome. He's yes. just like, I'm gonna do this.
Well, the best, I think the coolest shot of him, like this, we're looking at a 2-page spread where he's blowing up a bunch of ships. But I think even cooler than that is after Galactus recharges him. And he's like, behold, the Silver Surfer, herald to Galactus. And Silver Surfer has a fucking evil look on his face. He's like, I'm about to fuck shit up.
I'm about to murder the shit out of some bugs. I'm down with being herald to the Galactus again.
I like that his existential crisis resolves in badassery. Like, he doesn't just flounder around for a whole bunch of time being like, I feel so bad because I work for Galactus. He's like, no, I will keep my remorse. Give me power. It's like, he's actually a really good character, who... There's kind of a trope where you have the badass who undergoes the moment of, painful introspection. And I feel like that's really well done here. Because it doesn't feel like self-pity. It feels like actual personal growth and change.
Yeah, he's... Like you said, he's entirely accepting of his own remorse. Like, and he says, like, I did this. I killed these people. I'm the Silver Surfer. I did this. It's okay.
And it's kind of interesting, like, he's halfway justifying it to himself, but then he's kind of like, well, you know, that is, like, a real justification, that there's a purpose to Galactus.
And I also like Galactus's interaction with Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've read Galactus before, but I think Ultimates Galactus doesn't really count. And then we read the original first viewing of him, where also doesn't count because you don't get any personality from him other than, I'm gonna eat you all. That's all we really got of Galactus. Here we kind of get his personality where he's like, I just do what I have to do. You know, even when he was talking about Aegis and Tenebris, he's like, I did to them what needed to be done.
Yeah, he's like a concept personified, right? He doesn't have machinations, you know? He just does what Galactus do. He do what he do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's devour planets.
Isn't there some greater purpose to him doing that? Like, his balance, or...
Well, I'm not sure. I think it's in the... There was a Marvel series called Universe X, and it was like it was one of their alternate timeline stories, and in that, the reason Galactus devours planets is because planets are like eggs for the Celestials.
Mm.
So the reason Celestials seed planets is so they kind of like feed the Celestial that's growing in the planet. And the purpose of Galactus is to devour the planets so their population doesn't get out of control.
Hmm.
See, that's really cool. And I actually thought that Aegis and Tenebris were Celestials until they named them as Elder Gods later in.
Yeah, because they look like the Celestials.
Yeah.
But I think in the main Marvel continuity, I think Galactus is older than the Celestials. Because
he was there at the creation of it.
He's the only being that survived the destruction of the previous universe.
Oh, yeah. I remember that in his origin. And he, like, bonded with an astronaut, right? As, like, a hungry force. And...
Yeah.
See, that's actually, like...
Yeah, he wasn't Galactus in the previous universe. He was a scientist.
Yeah.
And then he survived and became... He's reborn as Galactus in this universe. And he serves some purpose. Like, there's... I wish I could remember. But there's three universal concepts that are, like, at the same level. One of them is Galactus. One of them is Death. Mistress Death. And there's a third one. And I don't remember who he is. Or it is. And they're, like, three ideas that are, like, checks and balances of each other. Which seems weird because Death and Devourer of Worlds seem like the same thing. But
yeah.
I remember when I looked all this up and the way that it was explained, it made sense. But I can't remember now.
Well, I mean, the Devourer of Worlds probably... The way I always thought of it was like... think of the universe as like a forest, right? And there's older trees and newer trees. And if there's not some systematic, reasonable way for the older, bigger trees to die, then they will overshadow any younger trees, and the forest will never continue to grow because the old trees will grow older, cover everything in shadow, so nothing new can grow. Mm-hmm. And then the old trees die, and then you just have a barren wasteland. So, like, it's Galactus' job to go and take out some of the older trees so there's room, or make room for the newer planets to grow. That's how I always thought it was working, but I may be entirely wrong.
I feel like Galactus is working towards some greater good that no one gets to hear about because he's the only one who knows about it. But Galactus is never portrayed as malicious, except in Ultimates.
Yeah.
But that was a dumb version.
And yeah, even in like in the original Fantastic Four appearance, he appears as the evil character until they realize what he is. And then they're like, okay, he's not really bad, but we still don't want him to eat our planet.
Yeah, we still gotta get him the fuck away from here.
And I mean, I think they make the actual analogy, like, well, humans eat other animals, Galactus can eat humans.
Mm-hmm.
But, I actually thought that the Silver Surfer thing was really well done in that the background information I have about Galactus and the Silver Surfer enriched my reading of this, but it didn't make it. Like, it was really exciting on its own. You got a really clear sense of who these characters were and what their motives were and their desires without any background. And, I mean, it's all focused on kind of the Silver Surfer's remorse and his ties to Galactus, but you don't actually need to know any of that history to get it. And they don't expound it for you here either. They're just like, here's a thing. Read it.
Well, the most they talk about is like Silver Surfer's own coming to terms, not with his relationship to Galactus, but if you notice, like, every other herald talks about Galactus differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the current herald says, oh, of course you don't know. Nobody can understand the will of Galactus. Like, he's just so reverent about it, you know? But then all the rest of them have this little disdain, you know, like, oh, of course he says that, he's the current herald, he's still so young and naive, you know. And they all have their own different way of thinking about Galactus in the natural order, but the one thing that brings them together is that at least what Galactus is doing is natural towards cosmic resonance, and this annihilation wave is nothing like that, it's just malicious. Like, they can somehow feel the intention behind these greater cosmic forces, because they're so tied to the galaxy. So it's cool in Silver Surfer to see him go from being so cynical about the current herald to where he says Galactus is and ever will be.
Yeah.
He's like, when he gets some of that power back, he's like, okay, yeah, maybe there's a little bit of truth in what the herald says.
Well, it's kind of neat, too, because it takes a Nihilus coming by and doing, like, all this wanton destruction for the Silver Surfer to suddenly realize, like, you know, it is different, and Galactus has a purpose.
Yeah. He did herald death, but it was not. There was no maliciousness behind it. He just had to oversee where he went.
Yeah.
Okay, so I looked it up while you guys were talking.
Alright.
And Galactus is set, and says his purpose is to correct imbalances between the abstract concepts of eternity and death in the Marvel Universe.
Hmm.
But okay. I couldn't find the part where I explained how he does that. But so apparently in Marvel, there's a character called Eternity, and then there's Death, who we see in here. And the two of them comprise, they're both abstract beings. They're non-corporeal abstract beings that can appear in certain ways. Like, we see Death as a physical character here. Yeah. And the two of them comprise all of reality. Like, in all the appearances of Eternity in the comics, we don't see him here. He always appears on a white background, and he is like space. He looks like stars and planets and things like that. So you can be inside Eternity, or if you have sufficient abilities, you can leave him and be in his presence instead of inside him. And so Galactus' purpose is to, I guess, if you let Eternity go, if you everything's become eternal, then nothing ever goes away, which is an imbalance between Eternity and Death, right? Mm-hmm. So somehow Galactus balances that out. Don't know how.
Don't know the actual process of that.
So that's cool.
So then let's move on to the next little set of four with Super Skrull.
Mm-hmm.
The art in this one's much different. This feels a lot more cartoony kind of art.
I liked the art in this, though.
I do like it, and I think it really fits. It fits the story's purpose in that it makes it so the stretchy sort of powers that Super Skrull has not look so crazy. I mean, if you were too realistic, the stretchiness and the fire and the clobber and time fists would all be a little bit more awkward. Plus, it draws you in with that little Skrull boy's face so that you don't see the betrayal coming. Like, the cartooniness lulls you into just not even thinking about it.
I so didn't expect it. I thought the kid would turn out to be his son or something. But, damn, it was cold. And the vengeance that Super Skrull took on that kid was brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, and he is truly like the first, like, I think he's the most evil character that's not from the negative zone that we've encountered so far.
Yeah, he is straight up actually evil.
But it's weird because he's evil to, evil's not the word, he's bad to the non-Skrulls that don't suit his purpose, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But he is heroic to other Skrulls. Like, he wants to...
There's sort of a legend around him.
Yeah, he's a complicated character, you know?
I mean, he's fought all these battles, and like you said, his defeats outweigh his victories. But still, he's had a lot of good victories in his lifetime, and he is an achievement of Skrull science and bioengineering.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of weird that they would need to give a Skrull stretchy powers or the ability to take, like, you know, the thing's kind of stone form skin, because they're shapeshifters. That's very powerful in and of itself.
But I think he can shape to look like stone, but he can't actually be stone. And with these powers, he can use the living stone that is the thing is made out of.
Because I remember in the first book, Pybok actually does a really cool thing where he turns his hand into a blade and stabs someone. But I guess if you had enough force and a pointy enough hand, you could stab someone with your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just a matter of making your physical shape sharp enough.
Yeah.
But, like, he probably couldn't actually make that physical shape produce real fire.
And he probably couldn't stab through something sufficiently hard, right?
Yeah.
If you're stabbing through somebody's gut, you probably don't have to be that hard, really. It just has to be sharp. And if, I guess if you're a good enough shapeshifter, you can, you know, you have the finesse to make an edge that sharp enough to cut through somebody's skin.
And I think one of the other things that makes Super Skrull kind of an interesting character is his unexpected ability to be a leader. You know? Like, I think he doesn't want it, and I think that's also... For so long, he's probably been just himself. I haven't seen him do anything else. This is really my first time reading Super Scroll, even though I've heard of him and know of him. It's my first time reading anything with a Super Scroll in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far as I can tell, in my recollection, it's always just been him out, like, fighting on his own. Alright? But here you get to see him as a leader, and people are sort of naturally following him. Like, the boy naturally wants to follow him. You know, and then the people that he frees naturally kind of want to follow him. I mean, he has to beat him down because, you know, it's a prison.
Mm-hmm.
But then they willingly enter his service and do everything that he asks.
Well, they're not really, like, criminals. They're more like POWs.
Or, like, political prisoners of some kind.
Yeah.
I really thought that his relationship with, I think, Praxagora?
Praxagora, yeah.
Was interesting in that... You know, there was some romance there, but it was mostly about, like, friendship and sacrifice. That he saves her at the end was a... I guess the narrative was kind of pointing you towards that the whole time. Because we see the kids saying, like, oh, he's so evil, I thought he was good, but he's evil. And then you actually see him fighting for a greater good by doing bad things. And I don't know.
But... Yeah, and I think doing it through the kids' perspective... lets you see that, yes, objectively speaking, the things that he's doing are evil. He's torturing these people. He's doing all these horrible things to these sentient creatures, even though they're the bugs of the Annihilation Wave. They're sentient. He's, like, threatening to crack them and let their guts spill out of their exoskeleton. You know, he's doing a lot of, objectively speaking, evil things. But I think that that's where the art comes in again. It sort of takes you out of the idea that you're in the context of war. You know, and Super Scroll says that, like, look, this is a war. What I'm doing is evil, but these men are worse.
Yeah.
You know, and it's evil, yes, but I just want to save people.
And I feel like the little team he puts together, he's honestly befriended. It doesn't feel like by the end he's using them in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, oh man, his Priak, the guy who multiplies when he's hit. It was so sad when he died. I really liked him.
I like that. You need more labor? Give me a second. Come here, Preak. Then you just hear thud, 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 thud in the background. And then, boom, you got like 20 Preaks. There's your labor. Done. Make it happen, kid.
So, kind of one of the things that stretches over all of these separate things is fucking Annihilus.
Yeah.
And I... really hate him. I wanted to talk about it last time, but we hadn't really covered enough ground with him, or we hadn't seen him enough at that point. But he seems so retarded. He is the picture of the dumb dictator who should not be able to succeed, because he's just like, give me stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he doesn't seem to attract any natural loyalty, just anger, an angry loyalty.
Well, it's a hive structure, right? So there's not really loyalty.
Yeah, they're just mindlessly having to follow him.
He's so childish in the way he acts and treats people. Like, when he gets Thanos working for him. Like, yes, Annihilus is kind of a big bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Thanos is pretty scary.
Yeah.
By himself. But Annihilus is just like, no, I want you to do this and this and this. And he... It seems like he doesn't even realize he's being played.
Why is it taking you so long, Thanos?
Yeah, he's like... I mean, I understand the idea of someone who always gets what they want and acting, being used to that power. But the whiny bitchingness is just so... Like, how is this guy leading an incursion into the galaxy? How did he even get to the top of his, like, little hive? It doesn't make sense.
I'm honestly expecting in the third one for... Because Thanos, the more and more you read here, the more and more you realize that Annihilus controls the Annihilation Wave, and it's a big, blunt object. But Thanos is the one who's actually smart and powerful. Thanos is the one who's actually got Aegis and Tenebris on his side. Fighting for Annihilus, yeah, but on Thanos' side, you know? And he's the one who's actually got Galactus, and he's actually captured Silver Surfer, and he's the one who's figured out the physical or biological application of the power cosmic. And I'm expecting in the third book for Thanos to just kill the shit out of Annihilus and take over.
Yeah, and I mean,
Because, I mean, by the end of reading the second one, Annihilus is, you're right, he's just a big whiny, give me this, I want this, this is what needs to be done. Make it happen faster, 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 I'm going on the attack, faster, faster, faster. And Thanos is the one who's actually doing the thinking and planning and doing.
And Annihilus doesn't even realize he's being played.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, Thanos sits there and, like, talks about it on the ship where you assume there are guards listening. And he talks to that annoying little pixie thing.
Skreet.
Skreet.
I kind of like Skreet.
I can't stand it.
Skreet's annoying, but it's annoying in a charming kind of way.
Skreet is like Gollum.
Yes.
But more annoying somehow.
See, but like Gollum? See, but that's the thing. Skreet is like Gollum, right? And not like Jar Jar.
That's fair.
Jar Jar's annoying because Jar Jar's fucking retarded. Skreet is annoying because Skreet is annoying. Doesn't mean Skreet's retarded, just Skreet's annoying. You know?
Yeah.
Like Gollum, Gollum's a complex, interesting character. He's annoying as shit, but he's complex and interesting. And Skreet, I think, has some things about her that she's probably hiding. I mean, why the fuck would she be hanging out with Thanos? And why the hell would Thanos care about Skreet? Like, the fact that those two are together makes it interesting for me. Skreet has to be worth something.
Mm.
Thanos doesn't dick around. Every other thing near Thanos, let's see, the Fallen One, the first Herald of Galactus, Death itself, Galactus, Aegis and Tenebris, everything around Thanos is worth the damn. And Skreet can't be the one thing that's not.
Well, I mean, the way they identified Skreet was actually kind of cool. One of the few beings left from the
creation of it. Then they call her a chaos sprite or something?
Yeah, and that means she's almost as old as Galactus. That's probably useful in and of itself.
Well, didn't she, like, fly into one of the Seekers?
Did she?
I don't remember that.
I don't know.
I think I remember her, like, fighting something. That might be until the third one.
I think it's in the third we see her attack some, like, pretty powerful being and knock it off its feet.
But just finally crashing into her. That might be in next.
Yeah, book. I'm pretty sure it's in number three.
So then Ronin. We can do the Ronin story next too. We'll just go over them briefly and then we'll go back. Did you guys like the Ronin story?
I really hated the Ronin one.
The Ronin one didn't make a lot of sense.
It was a series of random events that seemed like they were put there to move along a plot. And
I think the whole point, I mean, the point of all these stories was to like introduce the characters that are going to matter later.
Yeah.
But Ronan's tied into Annihilation, the Annihilation Wave the least.
Yeah.
Until like the end when the Annihilation Wave arrived at the planet. But everything leading up to that, he was like not doing anything,
this
really.
This whole thing with Gamora and the woman who wronged him, the Rigelian, I don't even remember her name. Like, the whole part, I don't care. You know? And I get that it's hard to get personality from Ronan because he's a man of few words. And that comes up. So I think somebody actually says it to him, like a man of few words. I appreciate that. Silver Surfer's a man of few words, too. And we get a lot of personality out of him. A lot in very few words. And Ronan's just like, I'm an accuser, I accused you, you're accused. Done. But you don't have Korea authority, accuser. That's like all he does.
I really wanted to know what was going on with the creator dude. Who creates, like, this. He's like, I'm gonna come in here and fuck your shit up by making it so beautiful! What? What are you doing, guy?
Yeah, he seemed really just added in there, and I don't understand why. Because functionally for the story, all it is if you know who he is, I imagine he's a really powerful being, and you go, oh shit, look, there's the creator, and then, oh shit, the creator just got fucked up. But I don't know who the creator is, so I don't have that shit moment, you know? I don't get the reference. I don't know. I've never heard of him before. And then later on, it tells you he has like one of the Nova file things on him. But by then, it's like, okay, I'd rather not just read Wikipedia about him. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I actually want to know who the fuck this person is before I read the story. Thanks, though.
Yeah, I also felt like the art didn't tell me well enough. what was really going on. Because I was kind of like, wait, there was a change of scenery? We're in a different place? What just happened? I kind of felt like this was all supposed to take place in close proximity, yet all the characters were very ignorant of the giant explosions and stuff happening nearby, or the beautiful city being raised up.
But I think that's ties into what we don't get about the creator. Because they say that there's some pressure, some powerful being on this planet who's making us all lose focus in our rage. Right? And like the creator somehow made everybody really angry at each other so that this power would be released and he could harvest the released power. But I don't understand why that all has to be there. Like, what's that episode of Firefly where they, like, are rescuing a bunch of horrors on this barren planet? Yeah. What is that one? This reminded me of that. I don't know why.
I don't remember the title, but basically there's someone threatening all these prostitutes, and one of them, because one of them has a baby.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know why this reminds me of that, but it does.
Maybe like it's the Graces?
The town of Kree reminds me of the House of Horrors.
Okay.
And like, Ronan is Malcolm Reynolds. He's going to come into the Kree town and protect everybody and free them from Gamora and her Graces. Like, that's what the story was. And then for some reason there's a creator in it. I don't know.
See, what I thought happened was that this creator guy somehow drew Gamora and her Graces and Ronan to this planet so they could fight and he could steal the energy from their fight to create a beautiful town.
Yeah.
And then I got the notion that they were altering he altered reality. He didn't just transmute matter. So that's why nobody really noticed that the town had changed.
Yeah. Mm. It was just...
But that, like... We all read it very differently, so who knows which one's right. I'm kind of disappointed, because I feel like Ronan is a character that has a lot of potential. But we don't get... He's very one-dimensional here, and I think he could be cool. And knowing what I know, since I've read a lot of the stuff, that the aftermath to this, he does become an interesting character, but here he just isn't.
Yeah, and you're right. There is a lot of potential here for a really interesting character, given that he was an accuser, which I'm imagining is like a Judge Dredd of the Kree Empire, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's accuser and executioner and judge and jury all in one. You know, and in Kree society, he was this really powerful guy with a lot of authority, and it got wrongfully stripped by him in a power play by a bunch of merchants. And it just none of that complexity comes out in his character. He gets exiled from the Empire, and so far as I can tell, on backworld planets where he doesn't really have authority other than the fact that he gives himself authority, walks around judging people.
He goes to Tatooine, basically.
Yeah, he goes to Tatooine, and he judges somebody and makes them die by rafter. Like, way to go, buddy. There's no complexity here going on with you. You're just in denial. And then you go to a planet in denial and band with a bunch of other Krees who aren't in denial and say, hey, Ronan, you're in denial. And Ronan says, I'm not in denial. Kree! Dude, of course you are. Wake the fuck up.
What's weird is the hammer. Because
it seems to be where all the power is.
Yeah, all the power's in the hammer, but it also seems like it's a hammer that works through his station. I don't know. I kind of got that impression, like, yeah, because he's an accuser, he has this hammer, not because he's Ronan.
Right, I think that the hammer is the tool of the accuser. It's his base gaffle.
But why did they let him keep it if they're exiling him and they don't want him accusing anyone of anything anymore?
Maybe he's real powerful, so they were like,
never mind.
We're not going to try to take that from you, just go away.
See, and if the Kree can just manufacture these fucking badass hammers.
Maybe they can't, there's only like a few of them. Well, see, that's the thing, we don't get enough of that. Maybe it's not supposed to matter. Although I think it's relevant.
See, but then yeah, all the power comes from the hammer, and then if he's going to fight the Annihilation Wave with his hammer, right? Then if there's a race of people who can make a bunch of these hammers, beat the shit out of the Annihilation Wave with these hammers. The problem fucking like, solved.
I think the hammer has like some kind of power cosmic to it.
Well, it like it rearranges matter. Right, there's a scene where he rearranges the matter of somebody's blaster gun kind of thing. Then he reverses somebody's gravity. Right, like that woman he makes fly up into the air and back down.
I thought that was just a joke because he threw her really high.
No, I think he really just negated her gravity for a second.
Oh, okay. See, that's...
I don't believe that Ronan can make a joke.
I guess, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he has.
It just, there was so much banter elsewhere, and he was talking to his buddy, so it, I kind of thought, like, oh, I reversed her gravity. It's meant to be a really bad joke.
And that might be, that might be the other reason that we don't get personality from him, because Silver Surfer, I mean, again, the comparison, because Silver Surfer is also a really stoic, you know, man of small, of not very many words, except he still gets a, like, even the Silver Surfer has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes out in these little, small, quick little, like, words back to people. Like, where was it? Like, he talks to Ravenous, and Ravenous says, you know, in another world, you could be friends. And he says, I tire of you, friend.
The Silver Surfer is so aloof. And that's kind of what makes him funny at times. Because you expect him to be serious. And he's simply not all the time.
And he even takes that tone with Galactus. Like, Galactus says, be quick about it, Harold. There are limits to my indulgence. And he says, yeah, I hear. And then he makes a surfboard. Like, that's awesome. But we don't get any of that little... No little comments to help personality come out with the Accuser.
Yeah, I don't... I think the Accuser... We see later, he has great prowess in battle. And I think he's just meant to be one of those, like... Badass, macho guys.
So then, is Gamora interesting at all? I mean, there's lots of obligatory butt shots. I should like her.
I think that she gets interesting, but part of it that makes it seem implausible is that she seems like kind of a lame backwoods villain in this, and then suddenly she's like, I'll join up with you. Let's have, you know, let's fight
a
Nihilus.
This is a really unfortunate portrayal of Gamora, because she's actually kind of a good guy. She was part of the Infinity Watch with Adam Warlock and Drax.
Oh, okay.
And she had one of the Infinity Gems when she... Because, you know, that's what the Infinity Watch was. Each of them had one of the gems. And so she had one. And somehow she becomes this, like, bad guy on this planet. It's just like, it seems... I don't know. She's supposed to be the deadliest woman in the universe. Is that what they call her? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she calls herself. Well, you get like three panels of how she got there, and it was like she thought she could be a big player in the universe, and then she got out there and she got beat back down to this point, you know, which automatically, where is it? It was said she had been humbled by the great powers of the universe, abused and discarded. Gothab was simply the hole she'd chosen to crawl into.
She's kind of like a girl version of Drax, like, abilities wise, I think. But This whole, like, this issue of four issues, I apparently can't talk, just wasn't that interesting.
Yeah, I feel like...
It felt the longest of any of the sections.
Part of it, too, is, like, just Gamora for a little bit more. She really, I think, cared about the Graces, like, this little team she put together, and it seemed like she wasn't just trying to be a dick. She was trying to kind of build a new life with some friends. But they made her out to be such an asshole at first. Like, I'm gonna fight you for no reason because I'm a crazy bitch. That it just didn't work. And I feel like nothing in these four issues made that much sense. It was really arbitrary.
Nothing, yeah, I don't think anything was well explained. Like, I was looking on Wikipedia just now. Apparently, Ronan is the supreme accuser of the Kree Empire. And he's the only one that has the hammer.
Hmm.
So I don't think they gave... I don't think it was manufactured and give it to him. I think it's, like, his.
Oh, that's cool.
Because apparently his armor is, like, cybernetic and has all these, like, little nifty things that it can do. And gives him super strength and stuff. And he's a military genius. And he just has this badass hammer, too. But we don't get any of that here. And I guess that's something that we should have known before. But all the other series, we get... we get enough background to piece it together, but we get none with Ronan. Like, Nova, we find out who he is and his conversation with the other core members, and then with Drax, he kind of explains things to Cammy a little bit.
With Silver Surfer, we get it with his little discussion with the other ex-heralds, and we get that they have, like, this own little club where they kind of know about each other and maybe hang out and grab a beer every once in a while. And then, you know, but, like, we get his background through those interactions.
And then Super Scroll, we get his background through the eyes of the mechanic.
Yeah, and through his own internal monologue, too.
But like, with Ronan, we don't get anything.
We don't get internal monologue. We don't get any interaction with anybody for any kind of background. Yeah, I think we get the most background, though, for Super Scroll. Not just about, like, not just about Super Scroll himself, but the Scroll people. And by learning so much about the Scroll people and their warlock ways, like how Super Scroll says, the last time I saw Sarnog was during his first hunt. I stood on a hill some distance away, an unwanted guest, and watched him drink the bile of a live Grang beast.
Yuck.
I have never been so proud. Like, you understand, these guys aren't fucking around, you know? And then you see Ronan's a badass, but then the other Kree are just kind of, like, normal. You don't learn a whole lot about the Kree and their fighting ways. And even though they're another warlike empire as well, you don't get that through his story. And
aren't the Kree supposed to be, like, the scariest badass motherfuckers in the universe?
I think they're the most, like, military. They're, like, the eternal enemy of the Skrulls. They, like, those two people. I mean, we get that a little bit in book three about how much they hate each other.
Yeah. Best Skrull is a dead Skrull.
Like, Ronan, like, the Kree are very rigid in their ways, their military ways, and the Skrulls are kind of underhanded.
But, like, even if we had gotten that sort of Kree badassness out of Ronan, at least then it would have contributed to the overall, oh, fuck, of the Annihilation Wave. Because you see the Annihilation Wave tear through the Skrulls, and then you read the Super Skrull thing, and you're like, and they tore through these people? Like, they were nothing? These are, like, super militaristic, warlike people.
Mm-hmm.
They love killing shit and drinking bile with their... their children drink bile of a beast, and that's how they come of age.
And I mean, like, Ronan's friend easily could have done something badass, right? Made us go like, wow. And then they could have made a comment like, he's nothing compared to Ronan. And then we're like, oh, Ronan, he's so hardcore. But no, he's like, got a hammer. Gonna judge you.
And then we get, more references to Star Wars in here. I think it was the second issue of Silver Surfer.
That was pretty cool. That one was obvious. I was like, haha, that's funny, like, as I was reading it.
Like, you see him sitting, where is it? I think it's in the second issue.
It's an Alice's throne room, right?
Yeah, and you see him, like, chilling on it. Well, the first thing you see is, like, him chilling in a throne, right? With a view of all of his spaceships behind him. He's got two, I don't know, elf bug women?
I thought was weird, because the queens are, like, these weird, fat... tremor worm-looking things.
We've never seen anybody like these two anywhere in the Annihilation Wave ever.
So I think it was just a way to... I think it was the artist's choice trying to show that Annihilus' pimp hand is strong.
But then as you slowly pull back away from the throne, like, you see the whole throne room, and it's so obviously Emperor Palpatine's throne room from the Death Star.
Yeah, from Return of the Jedi.
But it's awesome.
He's got those little pod things that... nothing ever happens to them in Star Wars, but they're on everything, everywhere.
Yeah, but, like, the chair is the exact same, the window is the exact same.
Yeah.
And I'll put a picture of this on the website at AtomicPowerSupercast.com, and I'll put a side-by-side comparison so you can see. I think I found the actual picture, too, that the artist used for reference to make that one. So which one of these three was your guys' favorite? I don't think any of us is going to say Ronan.
What?
Okay, was yours Ronan?
No.
Okay.
I'm just surprised. So, I'm just joking.
Somebody out there likes Ronan, damn it.
I think I like Ronan. I just don't like Ronan here.
That's fair. So then, which one did you like most?
The story that I thought was most interesting was Super Scroll. We learn a lot about this guy. We learn a lot about the Skrulls. We learn a little bit about the negative zone, that not everybody is a bug that loves Annihilus.
Yeah.
And we get, it's a lot of interesting, I think this is the first issue where we see that this really is a war.
Yeah.
Or this series, because we... Because everything leading up to this was everyone getting their asses kicked. And in this one, we see the Annihilation Wave coming up against one of the major players in the universe, the Skrulls. And them fighting, and the Skrulls tried to stop them.
Yeah. The Skrulls put up a fight. They killed this giant super weapon, all these Super Skrull did.
Yeah. But they were heavy tolls. Like, so many, like, dozens of Skrull worlds were destroyed by this whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was called.
Harvester of Sorrow, I think.
There you go, yeah.
Named after a Metallica song.
Is it really?
Right.
Yeah, there's a Metallica song called Harvester of Sorrow.
That's awesome.
I think it's called, yeah. Well, it's definitely a line in a Metallica song. But yeah, I think my favorite is Super Skrull. Well, I don't think it is. I know it was, because it's in my head.
So what about you, Jenna? Which one did you like?
Oh, man. It wasn't Ronin. But I can tell you, like, I actually feel really torn between Silver Surfer and Super Skrull. Silver Surfer is really badass, and I felt like they did a great job of showing, like, a really good amount of character in just four issues, and it never beat you over the head. It never was, like, really poorly done. It was never obvious, you know? And you just get so much of what the Silver Surfer is all about so elegantly. On the other hand, the ending of Super Skrull was so brutal, and I actually enjoyed that, because it...
And you don't see it coming. Yeah. You don't see that brutality at all.
It threw me for a loop. I thought, you know, maybe that the kid was going to be the son, and he was, like, trying to, you know, show his dad that he was a great warrior, too, and it would be, like, a touching reunion. I was expecting, or that, like, his name is Rukiel, right?
Rukiel, something like that.
I feel like Rukiel is, like, out of the Star Wars MMO. but, like, or I thought that he would take the most important position and blow the hell out of that harvester and then, you know, be a great warrior himself because he... But like, even better because he was...
That's Arkin.
Rukin.
Sorry.
I feel like maybe, oh, he was going to be an even better warrior than Super Skrull because he has compassion to temper his violence, or just, you know, something. And then he turns out to be this little shit, and it was so shocking. And I feel like it really made me feel for Super Skrull, whereas I might not have cared about him as much.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm torn like you, too. I think that Super Skrull is the better contained story. Right? And not just because of the oh shit at the end, but the way that the art lulls you into that oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a nice, cartoony, fun art style. And it works really well with Super Skrull and his power set, who is kind of a cartoony power set, you know? Like, with the stretchiness and the flame on and that kind of stuff. But it lulls you into not realizing the brutality of the fact that they're in a war. And that he cuts off this kid's limbs and cauterizes them. And chains them to the inside of the ship so he can see it blow the fuck up.
That is so brutal.
That's brutal. And you don't... That's more brutal than anything we've seen in Book 1 or the rest of Book 2. And it's done in this cartoony art style with a story where you think the hero gets redeemed. And the hero does get redeemed in the eyes of his own people. Like, in this sort of everything's great storyline, you don't expect it. You don't see it coming at all.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's like he does this to the kid, but then immediately after he... very willingly gives up his own life to save somebody else. So we know that he's not just some crazy-ass sadist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a person. And that's actually... I feel like a lot of the time in comics, aliens aren't necessarily conveyed as people because they like to reserve humanity for the humans. You know, mm-hmm. like, oh, the power of his humanity won the fight.
Yeah.
That sort of shit. I mean, that's actually how they defeated Galactus the first time, right? They had the power of heart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that always drives me nuts, but I like it when I see an alien who is a very fully fleshed person in comics. I guess that means I kind of like Super Skrull better out of that and Silver Surfer.
See, and I'm torn as well because I like the Silver Surfer storyline, and that I think we get the best evolution of a character. I mean, in Ronin, we don't get any. In Super Skrull, we get the realization of the fullness of his character, but I think he doesn't change as a man from beginning to end. I think the sorrow of his loss changes him and makes him want to redeem himself a little bit, which is why he has Praxagora save herself and continue on, because he wished he could have saved his son, kind of a thing, maybe. But I think that character was always in him, and we just got to finally see this character in a way that we probably never did before. I mean, even if we read Fantastic Four and read him as an enemy, I don't think we would have seen him to this extent that we do here. But I think Silver Surfer, we get to see him interact with his remorse and his self-reflection, and we get to see him not only talk about it with himself, but talk to the other heralds to make sure it's not just some thing that he has all by himself. He's not just being sold out, but even the other heralds had this sense of remorse, even though they knew that it was right. And we see Silver Surfer come to that remorse, accept it, and own it. Like, we see that character evolution in just 4 issues. It's great. So yeah, I'm torn too. I think I like the Silver Surfer one better, just because the moment of badassery was so much cooler. Like, after reading this trade, the one, like, 2 panels that stuck out of my mind was when he was reforming that surfboard. It was so fucking sick. Fucking melty surfboard. Coolest goddamn thing in here. So, I don't know. I think that's it. I don't have anything more.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll rate these 3 trades until next week. Until then, you can hit up the website, which is
www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com.
Or you can always find us on Twitter.
At apsupercast.com. Damn it, I always do that. I always say apsupercast.com. There's no .com. It's twitter.com/apsupercast.
This is your subtle way of making me pay for the apsupercast.com domain, isn't it?
No, I don't think that would be... Well, I mean, it would be easier to spell than our current one, but...
Yeah.
Anyways. You can also subscribe to us on...
iTunes!
Yay!
See, that was done Jen's way. I gotta find my own voice.
And if all those things are not of your liking, you can also email us.
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com. That feels weird. I never do that.
I totally stole the outro from you.
I know. What the fuck? After fucking up the Twitter name, you just stole it.
Yeah. It was my way of... It's my penance.
Redeemed.
So, yeah. That's it for this week. See you all next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Seriously, you guys, can we just talk about Tibetan freedom or something? Or just give me some candy.